And welcome to the October 19th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We're coming to you live today inside the Kirby Family Studio in downtown Sioux Falls. And we've gathered the experts to talk tech and answer your questions. With me is John T. Meyer. Hello, John.
How's it going, Kent?
It's well. How are things in the last couple of weeks for you?
Good. Yeah, I had a little bit of travel. I was in New York City earlier this week. Saw a couple clients, and it was my wife and I's fifth anniversary. So we went out there a little bit earlier for the weekend, saw a show, went to dinner. And yeah, I always love going to the Big Apple.
What was the coolest thing you saw there?
I'd say the coolest thing we experienced, we did a 15-course dinner in Lower Manhattan, a restaurant called Blue Hill. We saw the chef originally on the show Chef's Table, if you ever heard of that show on Netflix. It's a beautiful show, like if you feel like food. And we were like, we have to go there, and it lived up to the hype.
If you like food, he asks me.
Well, I'm just to the audience.
If you like food. Yep. Okay, cool.
Amos? I prefer like experiences over like things, right?
Yeah.
Memories, making memories, experiencing things, trying things.
So, anything tech related out there? It was kind of cool. What does New York have that we don't in South Dakota?
That's a long conversation.
Yeah.
We only have an hour. No, I'm. Okay. Well, Amos Aesop is here from Exigent.
How you doing?
Good to see you.
You too.
We missed you last show, and we're glad to have you back. What's been happening in your world?
No travel this week for me at all. I've been sticking local, we had our customer appreciation party last night. That was
nice.
That was fun, and it's always good to. Create relationships with the folks that you work with on a day-to-day basis and more than just a business aspect to get together and, recognize them as personal relationships. And it's nice to meet them on a different level.
Is that a lot of local clients? Are you bringing people, flying people in?
We had people that came in from as far away as California for the event. The majority of them, of ours are local. We've got another office in Minneapolis, but... the majority of them are local,
Cool.
Very great. From the Bureau and Peer, Jeff Litterick joins us as well. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Anchoring Peer, as you always are. Anything new in the last couple of weeks for you?
No, not really. It's just been the normal day-to-day kind of stuff.
Sure. Meat and potato... keeping hackers out of our secrets kind of stuff.
No news is good news for Jeff.
I think so. Well, Jeff, we wish you all a boring life. No, I'm just kidding. We don't. We hope it's boring, I guess, on the
work front.
On the work front, absolutely. There's been a few kind of interesting things in the news, and I thought it was interesting to hear, to read an article from our hometown Senator John Thune was in the news this week talking about the little committee that he heads up and some legislation about self-driving cars. And it was a column in reaction to Ralph Nader, who is still on this planet, God rest his soul.
You mentioned that name. I had forgotten about him.
Yeah, he's around. And he put out an article last week specifically saying, and I'm just going to read this quote to you because he kind of goes off on our good senator. He says, John Thune is, quote, leading a reckless charge to open the floodgates of self-driving cars before this nascent technology is shown to be safe. And I pause and collect my thoughts on that. And the first thing that comes to mind is, and he goes on to further disparage Senator Thune on things. And I wanted to think, well, isn't that why you would put legislation into place, is to protect from that happening? And I'm wondering if that isn't sort of built into the bill. I haven't read it fully. But certainly there's consumer protection in there, maybe not enough for Ralph Nader.
Sure. Yeah. I need to read the article to speak to Ralph's comments, but I think it's a fair critique, right? It's something that he should bring up. I think, let's think on the macro level, trend-wise, this is going to happen, right? Like self-driving cars is an inevitable force, which I feel confident saying. I mean, we've debated on the show whether or not my 2.5-year-old daughter will ever own a car or not. I think because we live in South Dakota, she probably will. But if I lived in Chicago, I would say no. So I think self-driving cars, public transportation, that's where things are going. Now, Ralph is correct that, like, there's more, and Amos can probably speak to this better than I can, but there's more tech in a car. A car is more computer today than it is a car, almost, right? Yeah. And the cars that we continue to manufacture and create in our country, in our world today, are very, very high tech. And so with that does come hacking and data and information. And yeah, there's some legitimate fears and concerns. So I think the answer is, like many things, probably in the middle, which is this is going to happen, but let's make sure we do it carefully.
You know, I didn't know we were going to have this topic as a conversation today, but coincidentally this morning, I thought if there's ever a reason to have self-driving cars, you need to visit the corner of 85th and Western Avenue in Sioux Falls sometime between 7:45 and 8:10,
yeah,
where major intersection, but it's a four-way stop. And the propensity for human error to not understand who is next in line. And I pull up, I'm four cars back. 85th
in Minnesota, you said?
85th and Western.
Western, got it.
And I pull up, I'm four cars back, and there were six near misses by the time I got
through
the intersection.
Because only stop signs, there are no lights, right?
Yep, it's a four-way stop, and yet you've got people turning left in a turn lane, turning right, going forward in all four directions, and people just, you know, they're not quite sure who's next to go. And at that time, it certainly seems like some people are late for work, so they're in a hurry and might take some liberties that they shouldn't. So if we had those self-driving cars who had an understanding of what the right protocol was, and it always happened the same way each time, removes that human error, removes that dangerousness. Of course, there's always the, what happens if there's someone standing in the road and you're going to hit them, and your only option is to swerve to the sidewalk where there's two people on the sidewalk? Then what does the car do, right? I mean, that's the sort of thing you get into. There's some easy ones like four-way stops, and there's some hard ones like which way do I go when there's problems in both directions.
So, yeah, this has come to top of mind for me a couple of nights ago, driving home. It's 11:30 at night, and I just want to get home and get my shoes off because it's been a long day. And I look down at my digital speedometer on my truck, and it says I'm going 39. And I'm in downtown Vermilion, which is a 20-mile-an-hour zone.
Uh-oh.
And I'm going, and here's the deal. There's a lot of 20-mile-an-hour zones in Vermilion. There's
sure.
a lot of school,
sure,
okay?
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm. Schools are on a lot of fronts and things, and everything around the university is 20.
Mm-hmm.
And I pride myself in knowing what 20 miles an hour is, and I stick to it. And all of a sudden, I start kind of going through a self-diagnosis. What is wrong here? I'm going 40 miles an hour. Myself is telling me I'm not.
Sure.
But my truck is telling me I am. And I'll tell you what, it was a little freaky. Come to find out, there's a button on my steering wheel. If you hit the OK button, it changes from miles an hour to kilometers per hour.
Oh, sure.
I wasn't going 39 miles an hour. I was going 22 miles an hour.
Funny.
I knew it. My body knew it. I knew it in my head. But I was getting this feedback from the vehicle saying, you're going twice as fast as you should be going at 11:30 at night in downtown Vermilion. That's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it was like, wow, this is really kind of this whole human machine interface thing and self-driving cars all kind of came home to me.
Yeah, so I think there's the economic issue of self-driving cars, which is right now our cities are built and constructed around cars, right? We have large parking lots, parking ramps, we have big wide roads, we have driveways, we have garages. So there's a massive change that could undergo and will undergo in the way our cities and towns are constructed because of self-driving cars, and a huge economic boom too in terms of not having to have, you know, think about car payments, car insurance. Our cities could be more efficiently created and populated and not have to have big parking ramps. So that's the economic, but then I guess here's why I'm for it. I guess the safety part, right? While you're talking about it, they will be, self-driving cars are more safe than humans. They will be. If they aren't yet, they will be. And I'll tell you why. Drive anywhere and walk up to, like, approach a red light, stop, look over to the right or left, and see how many people are looking at their phones or holding their phones while they're driving.
Lots. Mm. And I'm just going to throw in a number here. 3 trillion miles a year is what Americans, just Americans, drive. 3 trillion miles a year. And I read this in an article that also a couple of big major surveys were done this last summer, and one of the numbers, another number that they came up with, 60% of Americans, 60, polled, said they would never set foot in a self-driving car.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, really? So like the one person, you know, unfortunately, there was one person who was struck at an intersection and died in Arizona from a Tesla, a self-driving Tesla, they were testing some of that technology. It sounds like that was a big headline, a sexy headline to run. And it sounds like as investigation and kind of the story came out a little bit more, it was a situation that probably would have happened with a human driver as well, given the way it went down. But we don't think or read about all the accidents that happen every single day when there are humans behind the wheel. And I think to your point about your speedometer being settings flipping, I think we all like to think we're all good drivers, right? So we're like, yeah, I'm better than a robot. Of course, like I'm a safe driver.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of, 11 o'clock, you'd be tired. Maybe you went to a work happy hour. Maybe, there's just so many scenarios that we're never quite as good as we think.
Is this all, the reason they focus so much on every Tesla accident, was things too flashy and splashy to begin with, do you think? Because that's been one of the criticisms by some folks that have left the particular companies in Google Tech and Tesla and Uber. There's three of those former major employees formed a company called Aurora to work with other car companies on self-driving tech. And they basically said, slow down, shut up, and don't have any flashy launches anymore of this stuff. Let's figure this out before we go and get everybody excited. And then, and like you say, every single accident, there's major headlines. I think that was part of the problem to begin with. Too many flashy.
Yeah, it's marketing, right? It's you got to keep up with your competition, especially in the car business. I mean, I have a friend who has a Tesla in Utah, so another more rural state like ours. To give you an idea of how it works, he told me. So he has a commute that he takes often because he is the CEO of a company. He's got two locations in two cities in Utah. He drives in his Tesla. It used to be prior to, I think, a couple of these or this one accident. You had to touch the steering wheel, I think, every 90 seconds when your car was in self-driving mode, letting your car know, like, I'm here, I'm awake, mm-hmm. I still know what's going on. Since that accident, they've done an update that now I believe it's every, like, 20 or 30 seconds, so they want you to be a little bit more present. But he admitted, he was like, I will sometimes work. I have watched Netflix while I ride in my car. It's Utah. It's, like, pretty straight. I mean, imagine going from Sioux Falls to Rapid City in a self-driving Tesla. That seems pretty safe, honestly. I think it'll get there. And here's the other thing. As humans, we will always move ourselves toward the least amount of friction, right? So, mm-hmm. Well, I don't have to drive anymore, and I can watch Netflix, and I can eat this Subway sandwich, and I, you know, like, it's gonna, people will do it. I know people really, like, people listening think I'm crazy right now, but it'll
be interesting to see how the variables get fixed too. Things like deer, rabbits, snow,
raccoons.
One of the things too. Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that the cars do is they can sense the lines, right, of where the vehicle is driving.
Yes. Seeing that already, right? Like lane assistance.
Right, and I have that in my pickup. But this last snowstorm, that's the last snow we had. We had, 3 inches or whatever it was. On the way up to, I drove to Brookings, and the snow completely covered the roads, couldn't see the lines at all, basically used the rumble strips to understand where you were at in the road, right? And so I'm assuming they're going to find a method for that. Is that going to include embedding some sort of signal in the road so that you don't require actual line of sight That you're getting some sort of radio signal that you're getting too far left or right. It'll be interesting. I do think there's going to need to be something tied into the infrastructure, the road, the interstates, along with the machine. But
like a future of all self-driving cars makes me think of the racetracks that we had as kids, right? Where you put the car on the track then you hit the button and it went, right? Mm-hmm. And it couldn't really get off the track once it was on.
That's the little post sticking down so it couldn't leave the lane. You'd spin the car around, but it couldn't literally leave the track. So what did your truck think of the snow? Did it just say, hey, I can't see any lines?
When it can't see the lines, it just says no. And I was thinking of this, too, when you mentioned the have to touch the wheel. Mm-hmm. Because on those lane assists, of course, the first thing you do is you put lane assist on. You say, okay, let's see what happens when I come to a curve in the road. And it does follow the curve, but then it gets very mad at you if you don't touch the wheel.
And I feel like we got a new Volkswagen Atlas with another baby on the way, and so a bigger car, and it has that lane assist. I've never had it before. I feel like it's making me a better driver because sometimes in those turns where you maybe just veer and mm-hmm. probably don't use a blinker and you should,
right?
It gets
right.
mad at me.
It does.
And you can't really get over unless you use the blinker. And so in a way, the machines are teaching us how to be better drivers.
Right.
Well, that's very interesting. They're giving me a lot to chew on here mentally. And I'm going to do that during this break. We need to take a quick time out. When we come back, I think I want to talk, Amos, about a little TV show that you taped a couple weeks ago.
Let's do it.
And talk a little bit security when we come back. And we are back to In the Moment Tech Radio. May not seem like it, but this is a listener interactive show. You can get a hold of us. The email is inthemoment@sdpb.org. Send me a text. It's 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. Our Facebook page is a wonderful place to check out. We've got all kinds of links that we're going to talk about on today's show. There's three videos there that I know of for sure that we're going to talk about today. One of them is from a program called Making a Living, and it focused on cloud and IT security. It was recorded right next door in the Leo P. Flynn Gallery. And Amos, you were on that show. That was kind of cool to see you there.
It was fun to do.
It was awfully early in the morning, so I caught the live stream.
It was pretty early, yeah.
That had a doctor from Dakota State.
Dr. Streff.
Yep. And Tim Berry.
Yep,
Was on there,
and you guys are doing this as a series, right?
Yeah, Making a Living's a series produced here, and this one happened to focus on. Last one was on ag. This one was on IT and cloud security, and I don't know. I'm not sure what the focus of the next one is, but I'll find out.
Cool.
But that whole show is there, but. They were talking security. Amos, I pulled a clip and I wanted you to hear that, and let's go to it now.
The human factor of, absolutely. Of those, you have to
if
be.
We could, if we could learn how to patch humans to fix all of those security issues, we'd be golden.
Is hacking a concern?
Yeah, 91% of all breaches right now are occurring because of phishing, which means it's because of somebody opening something they shouldn't, clicking on something they shouldn't, visiting something they shouldn't, that kind of thing. So we can do all the physical security. We can all do all the computer network, all the endpoint security, everything we want to do. But it's the thing that sits between the chair and the computer that is the big variable. And that kind of is what it is. There's all kinds of work being done there to improve human security. For example, there are anti-phishing tools that are out there that many businesses are using here in Sioux Falls and in the state, where they're testing their employees. They're sending out fake phishing scams and seeing what they're clicking on. And if they're clicking on things they shouldn't, then they'll get signed up for some training and that kind of thing. So there are some solutions there. But typically what I see when I do my tests is about a third of people are clicking on phishing scams. Again, if it's a very mature organization where they've done a lot of training, maybe that's down to 20, 25%, but it's not down to zero, to your point of there's no guarantees with security. You know, the bad guys are real. They are motivated.
Right. So I guess the point is we need to be motivated about paying attention to this.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the whole conversation was, we started out talking specifically about cloud technologies and where that originated and the direction that it's going. But then we kind of, over the course of time, got into just general security. You heard Dr. Streff there talking about doing some phishing examples inside businesses to test the training that they've given to their users. They send out those phishing emails with a, hey, your Citibank card has been hacked. Click here to log in, and we'll make sure to get you a new one. Well, in all reality, you're giving the bad guys your credentials there. So, you know, this is the test to make sure that your employees are not doing that sort of stuff and have learned from the training they've been given.
Just seems mean, but the fact is that email phishing and the pretexting, it accounts for 98% of all the social engineering hacks that happen, and 93% of all breaches total.
Email.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Jeff, you got anything you want to throw in on that?
No, it's true. I mean, it's kind of like we were talking about human friction before. Hackers always are looking for the weakest link. It's kind of like the arms race, right? We could improve technical stuff, and then they try to improve their technical stuff. But really, most of the time, they're successful by actually interacting with humans, humans being the weakest link in most security chains, actually. And phishing is a very easy, low-cost, less friction system, because you can send, you know, if your organization is big, all they need is one or two of the right people to click. It's not like, you know, they need 100 of your employees to click. If you have 1,000 employees, they just need that one or two. So it is a big deal. There's a ton of this stuff going on, and many, many companies are testing and training and evaluating and seeing what their users are clicking on and why.
Yeah, Jeff's right. I think that's the part that's disheartening, or even probably to the point where I just have almost given up. Like, you know, the Facebook thing came up, and the most recent one was 50 million more accounts hacked. And they're like, oh, actually, no, we were wrong. It's only 30 million. But like, if you have more than, I don't know, 300 Facebook friends, and then we create a social graph of 30 million people, like, then they probably got your information, even if you are the diligent one, right? Like, even if you are doing your job and you're not the lowest common denominator, you probably have a friend who is. And so it feels like, well, it just, yeah, it kind of seems hopeless.
Well, Jeff's boss sent out an email this week talking about security and things to do and things not to do. And of course, sometimes you get lost in some of these emails with the, oh, make sure you hover over a link and make sure you copy this or you don't do that, or, you know, check the spelling. And, you know, it's all the things that you're sort of has been pounded into my head about what to be suspicious about. But this email was particularly interesting to me because it said, okay, listen, just slow down. Just slow down.
Yeah.
Read it. You know, just take the time to examine what's going on here and deal with the email, and that's going to help. It's they said improving your security posture.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I wonder if part of that is mobile too. I think we move faster through email now because they're on our phones, and we're not always even looking at who the sender was, or like we see the sender, but we don't actually look to see that it was Wells Fargo and not Wells Fargo. You know, just like little nuances like that maybe when we're working at a desktop, sitting there with a keyboard, we might be a little bit more able to catch some of that. So I do agree that just slowing down, because there are enough hints you can, and I guess ground rule, right? If you're even 1% curious that it could be suspicious, just delete it. Like, if it was actually intended for you, then the person will email it again.
You look deep in thought, Amos.
No, that's really a good point. Is if you question it, contact the person. You know, reply. A lot of times when you reply, you're going to see where that email is going. Our company, in particular, like actually work at Exigen. We've had an inundation of fake emails that appear to be coming from our CEO, requesting yes. employees to go out and buy hundreds of dollars worth of Apple yep. iTunes gift cards, and then to scratch them and send our CEO the numbers, which of course it's going back to somebody at AOL or Roadrunner or whatever their address happens to be. There's just been an influx of CEO level phishing.
I had two of my employees ask me, did you just send me an email? Yeah. It was really random. It just said, hey, could you do this for me?
And in some cases,
it's like a subject line.
It's even bigger than that. Like they'll say, I need you to wire $15,000 to this account.
Yeah.
Right. And I need you to do it right now. I'm in a meeting. Don't call me. Just do it.
Yeah. That was the one that they got for me.
Yeah. And so in those cases, if your employees are not trained well and don't understand that that's a thing, it might happen.
Yeah. I mean, we're a small company where I don't even have a private office, right? We're all in the same area. So they could just be like, hey, did you send this to me? Yeah. But yeah, totally. Yeah. In a big company, when you just feel like you're taking orders from your CEO, then sure, I'll wire $15,000.
Right.
I'll send you some iTunes gift card numbers.
Yeah, that's so weird.
Maybe that's for the Christmas party. I don't know.
That's what the pretext was on this, was for a Christmas party.
Maybe Kent is double moonlights as a hacker. Apparently. He knows exactly how to write the script.
Whew. That's tough.
It works.
Yeah,
it hasn't been that long since. There's a little bit more complex part of that scheme where they figure out who your purchasing or finance officer in your company, and they send them fake invoices to pay. Right? There's even one where they intercept shipments and stuff with phishing emails on both sides and steal shipments from companies. The company sends it out, think it's going to this old customer that ordered it. It ends up someplace else. They call up the old customer for payment. I never ordered it. And there's a lot of stuff like that happening.
One of the shows I recently watched had an interview with an executive for a company that was doing AI on the side of basically reading emails and determining the hundreds of attack vectors. And is this email okay to deliver to this person, or is this a high-risk email, and sort of culling that herd before it even gets to the human? And I thought, well, when are we just going to take the human out of it?
Yeah, actually, this is a little bit of a side note, but related, speaking of AI, machine learning, and email, Google, if you use Google Apps or Gmail, has a new feature where you can, as you're typing, it'll start to auto-fill what they think you're trying to type, like to finish your sentence, and you can click the tab button and just skip the typing. So like today I was emailing a client. It said, you know, take a look at this proposal, let me, and then it just says, know your thoughts, period. And I just tabbed it and then said, I'll email you sometimes to, and it's like to meet and a period, like tab. Mm-hmm. And it says, it's so great. And so pretty soon it'll just read the context of the thread and it'll probably just ask me like, does this look good? And I'll be like, yep. And then you just send it. Right. You know, you won't even be typing the emails.
Here's your reply for your approval.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally.
It's, yeah. You know, well, Gmail's had those sample or those little
auto replies for a while.
At the bottom, yep. You got like three choices of what it thinks you might be willing to say, and then they take it a step further with that AI to predict your text.
I think right now we don't always click one of those three replies because you're kind of like, well, that doesn't sound like me, right? Like if I'm replying to my wife or something, they're like, do you want to go to this event next Thursday? And the answers are like, yes. Great, sure, you know, and I'm like, well, that's not how I talk. But I think pretty soon we're going to be like, we don't care. Again, least amount of friction. I don't care. She already knows it's a robot. Like, I'll click the button and we move on, and we'll go to that event. Like,
maybe it's going to reply with more personality than you normally would.
Maybe it'll make me more interesting.
We'd love to pick you up at our abode.
Yeah,
at the approximate time of
8
p.m.
Send you a cab. Yeah,
yeah. I'll send an Uber to your location as soon as possible. Yeah.
Interesting too, and I think the machine learning AI part, there'll be some. Hopefully, that will help us on some of the spam too, right? Like some of the machines will decipher some of
four of us. There's already systems out there that will pre-read your emails. It'll ingest them, read them, understand if the link that is actually behind the website that the link takes you to, if that's actually relevant to the link that it pretends to be. And if not, it will pull that out and replace it with this has been replaced because it was thought to be junk or it was thought to be bad. There are AI systems that will do that already.
I think one hopeful sign, you know, you always need to follow the money to see where things are going. And I saw a stat that Silicon Valley and some of the big VC private equity firms, data privacy and security are is one of the sectors categories where the most money is getting invested in to startups. So that's encouraging, right? There's both a need and a market opportunity for starting companies around security.
You know, that's also because we find, so earlier this week, Monday and Tuesday, we had some people who called us who said we just had a security issue. Both were ransomware. We're not sure what to do next. How do we fix this? And at both times, we went in and we talked to them, and they said, you know, the IT folks say, you know, we've kind of known this is going to be a problem or that we might be susceptible to this, but we can't get the C-level folks to understand the need to fix this. And then as soon as this issue happens and as soon as they no longer have access to their payroll or their customer information or their accounting, now the checkbooks are open, the wallets are open. And so there's, again, following the money. That's why if you have a startup as a security company, there's a pretty good chance you're going to do okay because those checkbooks are open when
they have an issue. Good job security for Amos and Jeff.
Right.
Very interesting. So just a side note, we talked about the program Making a Living, which that clip was from.
Right.
Apparently, resources for startups is the next topic of that show, and it's going to be right here in the Leo P. Flynn Gallery, the 23rd. Is that that's Tuesday the 23rd, I believe. And there's going to be some friendly folks from Zeal, some faces we all know and love on that program. And we'll get some more information out on that for folks if they'd like to join us live
in
person.
Is that on air too or just on the web?
It will be webcast and live in the studio here for folks that day. Cool. And so we'll get that information out. As I receive more of it and pay more attention to it, I'll get that out to folks because that'll be an interesting one too. And I believe right after this break, we're going to talk to yet another person from the Zeal board will be on after this next break, and we're going to talk a little bit about a Hack Sioux Falls event. They've done so well with it; they're going to get back at it again, and we're going to talk to William Bushy right after this. You are in the moment on SDPB Radio. I'm Ken Osborne, and we are talking tech with the computer guys today. Will Bushy joins us on the line. And Will, you've been a frequent contributor to the show and have always some wonderful things to say about the tech community and in the state and in Sioux Falls. And you've got an event coming up and want to talk about it.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Well, appreciate you having me on, Ken.
Absolutely. So so what I did this morning was I took a link that you sent me of some final projects from the last Hack Sioux Falls and posted that to our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. So, folks, if you want to see kind of what we're going to talk about today, those examples are live now, and you can get out and see that. And, Will, you're going to be doing this again?
Yeah, our first event we did earlier this year was a huge success. We had about 20 students participate, and we had them pair up into groups of 2 to 3 or 4 kids, and then we challenged them to build something interesting. They all got a small kit with some microcontroller, LED lights, and some LEDs, and some other sensors and components, and I was just blown away with some of the projects that those kids had built, and that's the link that you posted earlier today. We had one kid build a little lie detector test so he could test to see if his brother was lying. I wouldn't say it's scientifically perfect, but he had a lot of fun doing it. We had a couple kids take old radio-controlled cars and add cop lights to them, and one even put a siren on it and controlled it via Bluetooth from their phone so they could turn the siren on and off. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed teaching the kids all about the electronics, and they just built some really interesting things.
Very good. Did you happen to see a video that I tagged you on a couple of days ago? There's a program called Road Trip Nation, and this is a new one to me. I sort of was exploring their website because they had talked about a new series coming out on small town tech. They hop in a motorhome, put 3 folks in a motorhome, and send them out for a month and make a show out of it. And they happen to do one on, it's called Life Hackers. And it had some young men and women in the motorhome, and they went out and interviewed a bunch of tech giants at different, across the nation. Yeah. And I thought, this is really cool. Will, this should be like a this could really help a lot of his kids watching this. And I thought,
I did miss that.
Yeah, I said this. Will needs to see this, and I posted it to the Facebook page, and of course I didn't call you, but I should have. But that's another reason to stop out if you do Facebook. If you don't, that's cool. I think it's roadtripnation.com, I believe, is the website, and then they have a big one of those big scrollers across the top, and one of the slides in there is called Life Hackers, and I really thought that was a very inspirational program. To take the time to see, even as an old guy, I got a lot out of the program, and I thought this is really aimed at young folks and those that are trying to make decisions about getting into tech, and they hit obvious roadblocks or that they feel are roadblocks and how to get over them and advice from folks that have made it. One young girl. Is interested in being a what do they call that, a pen tester? So penetration testing of networks and things,
sure.
And needed that little extra help over the top to get on the right track. And I just thought it was a great program, Will, and I wanted to make sure you saw that.
No, I did pull that up here while you were talking. That does sound right up my alley. And I always thought that would be really cool to do a lot of that same type of a program where you get a small, whether it's a like an RV or even just some type of an old service truck, and put some laptops in it and some generators, and you know, just go around to different events and have the laptops there for kids to build video games or play around with technology or just learn something real quick. I mean, the big thing is just getting kids exposed to it. Like, a lot of kids may not even know what pen testing is, and they wouldn't even know this might be something that they're interested in pursuing if they never have that opportunity.
Sure, exactly.
Yeah, Will's exactly right, and that's why I love what he's doing, both with this and with the event that he does with the girls' coding event. It is all about exposure, right? A lot of these young adults don't get exposed to it, and so they never even fathom that these could be careers or professions or opportunities and lanes that they can grow up and go into when the market and the industries are saying, we need more of these people, but if they don't get exposed to it, they'll never know.
Will, hit us one more time with the contact information and the dates on this.
Yeah, excellent. So it's called Hack Sioux Falls, and the URL is hacksiouxfalls.com. And we're going to do about 6 weeks this time. It'll be mostly on Saturdays and maybe some Sundays if that works out better for people. And we'll challenge them to build something cool with electronics. And the project that we're going to focus on, because it's getting close to that time, Christmas, we're going to do a tamper-proof Christmas present. So they're going to bring a box, and then we're going to build a circuit inside of it so that if the box is shaken or moved or turned around or opened, it will set off an alarm. And then they can use that to, you know, maybe trick a family member or something like that and put it under the Christmas tree or make sure nobody's messing with their presents while they're under the tree.
Wow. It's a new way to tell your kids you don't get the presents, right? If you shake them, you can't open them.
This alarm goes off. You know.
That's right.
Only dad has the passcode.
It's 150. Well, yeah, and if some kids want to put a little keypad on it, we'll definitely help them get that worked out as well. But it's $150, and then we'll provide all of the electronics, and they don't need any prior experience at all. None of the kids from our previous Hack Sioux Falls had any electronics experience, and they all had a great time.
Will, what's your recommended age range?
Yeah, well, the last time I really didn't know what a great age range was going to be. And we ended up having kids between fourth grade and a senior in high school, and they all had a great time. So I'm kind of still leaving a little bit open and just kind of self-select them. The younger kids will group together because we'll be working in smaller teams of 2 to 5 at a time. So younger kids are fine. We'll just group them together. And then if the older kids want to explore and do more and build more, they will be able to.
And I saw here on the website, hacksiouxfalls.com, it does say ticket sales are closed. Is that, are they still, we can still get in if people haven't signed up yet?
Yes, it is open. I don't know why that says closed. I'll double check that here. But yes, we're still selling tickets.
Oh, you know what? I had the wrong one. I had Hack Sioux Falls 1. This is Hack Sioux Falls 2.
I was looking over his shoulder.
hacksiouxfalls.com.
Yep. I had Googled Hack Sioux Falls.
It'll redirect.
And took the first link, so that must be an older one.
Pay attention, Amos.
Sorry.
Slow down.
I'm new to computers.
I should have slowed down. I was just sharing what I saw over his shoulder.
Well, thanks so much for coming on and enlightening us with that. And we'll for sure have you on and let us know how you did and what you learned. Sound good?
Excellent. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, Will. HackSiouxFalls.com is the website if you want more information on that. And like I said, I put a video up on Facebook.com/TechRadio of the last, some highlights of the last Hack Sioux Falls. And you can get a feel for what the kids are going to do and what they're going to be doing. If there's some reservations, check those videos out.
Yeah, it's really
pretty cool.
Yeah.
So not to switch topics right off the bat, but we're going to. You said you want to talk a little bit about a company called Clear. Did you see that in the airports when you were going to New York?
I did, and we were talking about over the break there.
Yeah.
I just read it in the latest issue of Fast Company was a profile, a feature on Clear. And you may have heard of Clear if you've been, probably like me where you were frustrated because you're waiting in line to get through security and you see some other man or woman just walk right through, like put their thumbprint down and walk right in. They don't take their shoes off. They don't do anything. They just boom, right through. And so I was reading about this company. It was started by two people who were in the more in the security space, like government security, and they acquired this more of this technology. The company was geared more toward private sector and government, and they kind of reused the technology, made it consumer facing, and created Clear, which is essentially biometric security, which allows you to cut the line, right? So like, what a great human desire we all have since we were kids is to cut the line, right? So no security for airport. They're in 25 airports and 14 ballparks, I believe, right now. Maybe stadiums and ballparks, I should say. So if you're a South Dakotan listening, like you would be right now, you'd probably only get to enjoy this on your way home, a home trip, because they wouldn't have it at Sioux Falls.
Or if you're flying out of Minneapolis.
Or Minneapolis.
Minneapolis,
yep.
Has it. Yeah.
Awesome. That's one of the 25. And so what I wanted to kind of posture up to the panel is, and this is what the article is saying, is in this world where we are so concerned about our data, and rightly so, our privacy, are you willing to give up your thumbprint or a scan of your face for that less friction, for the ability to keep your shoes on, cut in line, and go right to the front? And the article didn't really take a stance. It was just saying, it'll be interesting to see. And that the business is showing that people are willing. They're growing very fast. It's $179 annually for a subscription. But then, this private company does have your fingerprint and like a scan of your eyes. And so I'd be curious to what you guys would do.
Man, that's a good question.
I did the TSA pre-check.
Yeah, me too.
Which, had then the government has that information, and I had to do the fingerprint thing. There was no iris scan at that or eye scan at that time. I don't think
there's
now.
Not yet. No. Nope.
Yeah, and so I was willing to do that. I know that my fingerprints have been. I remember when as a child there was some. There was some times where they would come through and they would fingerprint kids for abduction purposes, right? To make sure so that kids could be identified as to who they were. So my fingerprints have been on file for a long time, and I know many people haven't. But for me, it wasn't an issue.
Sure.
Do I have a problem with the facial recognition or the eye scans? I'm not sure. I have to really give that some thought. But I certainly do. I certainly do think it's a great deal when I get to skip the line with pre-check and walk on by in some of the major airports. That's certainly nice.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, whether they want to check my eye or stick a thing up my nose or stick out my thumb or whatever. But I mean, what brings this home to me is I think it was yesterday I got an email from the High School Activities Association. And there's a couple of big events, and they're on public television. I guess tonight and tomorrow is the cheer and dance out of Brandon. And then tomorrow is state cross country in Yankton Trail Park over here.
Okay.
And if you know anything about that, and you've been to a state cross country meet there, you'll know that the parking is fairly limited, and you're walking in, and so crowd control is kind of an issue. And they said, what you want to do is click this link and buy your ticket now electronically, and then when you come, it'll be less of a hassle to get in and out of the
sure.
cross-country. I mean, I thought, that's great. That
yep.
makes sense to me. So in some instances, you can purchase tickets prior, to these events. And I thought, well, that's a convenience. So if it's convenient for me to get an eye scan or whatever, and I'm going to skip a big line, I'm down with it.
I agree. Me too. And I think the article had an interesting point is that they really get people at their weakest, because to sign up for it, one of the inconveniences to us in South Dakota is that you have to sign up at one of the locations. So you can't just register online, obviously. So you'd have to go to Minneapolis or to one of these airports when you have enough time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, what's that one time when you don't have enough time, right? When there's too much traffic or you got going a little bit late, and all of a sudden you're like, okay, whatever, I'll pay whatever amount so I make my flight, mm-hmm. and you join Clear. But I do think one thing I noticed for a pro tip, if you are a Delta SkyMiles member, which I believe is free, it's just the frequent flyer club, for recording your miles, then instead of $179 a year, it's $99 a year. So you can save $80 there. And I'd be curious if listeners who use it, how your experience has been.
Great, great. Hey, we did get an email I want to get to yet on today's show, and we're coming down to the last couple of minutes. Bevo from Mount Vernon, which is a better system if you want to use for watching television, Xbox or PS4? Does anybody have any... Jeff, you got any recommendation on that?
I think either just do just fine. All the major services, the Netflix and stuff, are all on the back end. You may have a little bit different payment systems. And Xbox has kind of always pioneered in this, but I don't really think there's much of a difference. It's just the appliance on the TV. It's not the... All the services behind both are the same. You know, it's still using your internet connection no matter what. So I would just pick whatever one is the one you want to play games on.
Whatever your favorite games are, go with that one. Is there any requirement on that as far as is wireless internet okay, or does it have to be wired, anything special?
Well, most wireless stuff, I mean, Chromecast or wireless and stuff, and they work in most broadband. You really have to have a broadband internet connection for at least 10 megabits per second. And then there are some fees for the network or Xbox One subscriptions and the back-end fees for, like, Netflix, if you want to use Netflix and stuff like that. So there are, you know, some – there might be a little bit different. I think the subscription plans are about the same for either PS4 or Xbox, but you might want to check that out just to see if one will be a little bit cheaper over time if that's all you plan to use it for, is to watch TV, so –
Yeah, very good. Weren't there some innovations in the latest Windows 10 that was out to help tie in better with the Xbox for the experience of entertainment?
Yes, they keep adding new stuff. Unless you have a full Windows 10 PC, which then you could use a much better connector probably than your Xbox to watch TV on. You could actually, you know, pump it directly from your desktop, which has more power and will support, you know, better resolutions and stuff. You know, you're probably not going to use that much if you're looking to use the console. And remember, most Blu-ray players, even most smart TVs, will do all this stuff for most services without an Xbox or PS4.
Sure.
So just watch the TV. They're kind of, it's whatever you want to use. Your Blu-ray player, your TV itself, if it supports it, your PC, your Xbox. They're all going to hook to the same stuff. You're going to be able to have access to all the same shows.
Great info. Thank you, Jeff. We are running out of time. I want to thank our guests today, John T. Meyer, Amos Aesop, Jeff Litterick. Thank you so much. Everybody have a great, safe weekend.